Season 5, Episode 21, Seminal Thinking. It opens up with Simone and Russ having a... Well, Russell. I abbreviated to Russ. They have kind of a... They have a kind of a weird moment and in their house, in their apartment. I don't know, it just seemed kind of awkward because Russell left a marriage license application, I guess, and $1,750 on the counter, I guess, giving Simone kind of a, hey, let's do this thing. And Simone's just looking over the shit, and she's like, yeah, you know, marriage license, $1,750, because it costs $35. And then he sits across from her, and they have, like, this weird... I don't know if this is just to recap the fact that their whole arc this season was, do we get married, do we not get married? I guess that's what this was.
It's very weird, and I also thought it was, like, very passive-aggressive by her, too.
Because, yeah, the only reason they haven't been married already, or not married, but engaged already, is because she was the one having second thoughts. And now she's like, let's get it on, let's do it. And he's like, okay, alright. And then she's like...
He's a little bit like, where is this coming from?
He's like, what's going on? But eventually, you know, they kiss and agree they're going to get married. And you're like, okay, rad. Then they cut to a crime scene.
Okay, rad.
I mean, it's really like the only answer he's got. He's like, okay, solid. So they go to a crime scene where Medavoy, Sipowicz, Martinez, and Kirkendall are already there. Sipowicz is sitting on, like, a stump looking over a DOA's wallet, which was kind of weird. He looked kind of awkward sitting on that stump. I don't know if he's still just dealing with the after effects of his surgery, but he looks kind of like a weirdo.
Oh, I thought he was still dealing with the surgery stuff.
Sipowicz is looking over Hugh Wiggins' wallet, and apparently he's in auto sales, but he doesn't stay too long at any one lot.
He's like a serial auto sales dater.
he just can't stay committed to one spot. There's a bunch of random people around that are trying to see all the scene, like the see the scene, trying to look at the dead bodies and whatnot. And out of nowhere, Medavoy comes in. And he's clearly shaken and weird. And he says that he is disgusted because there is a double, because there's a second DOA in a lean-to, which is a phrase I had not heard, but I'm not involved in a lot of homeless culture.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before either.
Greg Medavoy cannot shake what's going on. He says that he is disgusted, revolted, and amazed. And he's like... The reason he is disgusted, revolted, and amazed is because there's just so much semen on the course.
Season?
There's so much season on that course.
She's got a lot of seasoning.
Yeah.
A lot of rosemary, a lot of thyme, too much mint.
Whoever killed her just put a lot of BAM!
Too much paprika.
What was
that? There's too much... Never mind. I was going to say cumin instead of cumin.
Oh my goodness.
Cumin all over her body.
Comedic genius. So much semen on the corpse. There's a looky-loo who's like, there's another body over there. And then Simone kind of, like in the perfect, this is just my job line, he just goes, okay, we got another body over there.
So Simone does not look thrilled.
He's not excited to go check out the well-seasoned dead woman. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. It sounds like you're doing the Law and Order theme.
I am. I just had it on my mind.
Before the two cases split up, they're all together over these two bodies. Martinez gets out of work going to the baby's first checkup, and I was like, oh, that's a nice excuse.
Yeah, I wish I could have a child I can fake to see and, you know, use it to get out of work.
he passes off some witnesses over to Kirkendall. And the witnesses are like, oh, I'll tell you everything that you need to know about this woman. And I was like, that's kind of creepy. Why do you know everything about this woman?
Yeah.
The female DOA is named Cookie, but her real name is Wanda Montgomery. And she asked, Kirkendall asked, was she a working girl? And the guy said, nope, full-time homeless. And I was like, does that come with benefits?
Or is it better to be part-time homeless?
You know, it just
find
depends.
Find another job and get those benefits.
She's a part-time homeless and a part-time Uber driver. The other guy said that she was touched in her head and that she...
But are you really homeless if you're driving your own car?
Well, she doesn't...
Or your own house?
She doesn't live in the car. She lives in the lean-to.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the lean-to.
She's diversifying her financial portfolio.
What the fuck a lean-to is?
She's collecting those dolls. She's going to sell them one day and make a fortune. They cut back to Sipowicz and Simone, who are looking over Hugh Wiggins. Oh, I forgot to mention in the beginning, they say that he bled out somewhere else and this is just a dump job. Sipowicz and Simone are digging through his cards, and he's also a realtor. And Simone says, is there any cards that look newer? Basically like a possibly the most current job he has. Sipowicz says there's no frazzled edges or snot on it, which made me wonder, is there a lot of snot on business cards in people's wallets?
Yeah, like, why? Yeah, that's a weird statement.
Russell talks to a hooker. Like, oh, sorry.
It was like, for some reason in Sipowicz's life, are, like, people just snooting on to fucking business cards and giving it to him. Oh, unless they think because all salesmen do, like, cocaine and they're using the business cards to, like, snort off of.
Oh, they're doing some contact information snooters, you're saying.
Maybe it's something like that. Maybe because they have to use the hard surface, that's how they, like, do coke. I don't know. I don't know why snot would be on a business card, because I feel like you leave your business card in your wallet until you're ready to hand it out.
Yeah, you don't want to hand out snot-covered business cards. That just seems like day one shit.
Oh, I mean, there is that subsection of people who take their business cards and then sniff them before they hand them out to people.
That's a good card.
That's a good card, yeah. It's like that scene in American Nightmare.
American Nightmare?
Yeah, whatever. What's the Christian Bale movie?
The documentary on the band, American
Nightmare. The documentary on the band. It's called American Nightmare. Don't give up the ghost.
That's American Psycho with Christian Bale.
There we go. There's that whole scene where they're like, all jerking off over their fucking, like, bone-colored business cards.
Well, Russell has a hooker with her named Marva. And No, not Marva. What's her name? Fuck. Marva's the hooker that the hooker tells Russell to go find. But Russell is dealing with a lady of the street. The hooker says she has information. And Russell says, okay, $50 and $150 extra if it's true. And then the hooker says, talk to Marva on 10th and C. She thinks she's queen bitch. You'll recognize her off her bony ass and skanky ugliness. And some cheap fur sheepskin jacket. When Russell asked why do we gotta talk to her, she said, you ask her. So then Russell gets a little pissy and says, fine, no more money, and walks away. And the hooker lets her know that you have to talk about a guy named Calvin, that he is a funny-colored N-word, and he looks Indian, which was, kind of an interesting 1-2 punch of...
Just hitting all the notes.
She says she do business with him that'll give you basis for your case. Russell's like, oh my goodness. And she says, oh, I've been tricking for a lawyer, and I'm coming back for the other $150, and then walks away like she doesn't know how legs work.
There are some interesting character choices.
Yeah, it's a very interesting... There's mostly one thing I want to talk about, and it's with Medavoy's case. When we cut back to the house, Fancy is clearly trying to steal something out of the... vending machines. He's not very good at hiding it at all. Sipowicz and Simone run both cases for Fancy, and Fancy lets him know that their DOA, the gentleman, what's his name, Wiggins, his boss is upstairs, and Sipowicz says, Craig Reisendorf? And I thought that was really funny, just the way he did that. Craig Reisendorf? It turns out they called his place of employment, and the car lot knew he was missing, as well as a car, off of a test drive, but they didn't call it in yet.
The guy they bring in, he kind of even says, like, oh, that's just, you know, that dude, like, that's the, he just had that type of, like, sales of relationship with people and that, like, ability, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, isn't that odd? Isn't
yeah.
that, like, an odd way to, like, do that?
Yeah, the, Sipowicz is quoted as saying they're too busy fleecing the unawares to, put in a call. And then as they go upstairs to talk to Craig, Sipowicz, what was it? Simone asks, is he trying to boost that machine? And Sipowicz says, absolutely. Sipowicz and Simone then take Craig Reisendorf, or Reisendorf, into a interrogation room, and they're aggressive with him from the jump, and the guy's kind of just, like, playing cagey. He's like, yeah, whatever, you know?
He's definitely acting like a used car salesman.
They ask, like, oh, you didn't think to call us after he didn't return from a test drive? And he says, oh, his overnights with customers aren't out of the ordinary. And then Sip runs down exactly what he does, which is he gets the person drunk, then has them sign the paperwork, and then they have this shitty car. But at one point, Sipowicz says, you get a BIM? Do you know what a BIM is?
I think it's a prostitute.
Really?
I think so. I think what he explains that the guy's move is he takes you out for a test drive. He then, like, gets a hotel room, and then, like, you guys sit down and talk about the car, and he, like, overdrinks and shit, and then he gets this, like, hot chick to come in, basically, like, gets him to sleep with you to kind of, like, seal the deal. Same thing that was happening to fucking Andy's kid, remember?
I see what you're saying.
You get what I'm saying? Like a hot chick comes in and helps him close the deal by being all flirty with the guy, maybe, like, giving a little sexual advances to him, and then he goes, like, oh, man, if I have this car, you know, blah, 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 and he's a little drunk, boom.
Oh, interesting.
Sold the car. Sold the car, made some money.
The guy keeps relaying that he doesn't know anything about the test drive, he doesn't have any of the information about who took it, and then he says, sometimes Hughes Q cuts corners and is remiss on paperwork. And I was like, that's interesting. And says he knew him casually for about 5 years in and out. He would come in and leave for various ventures in between. And Sipowicz says, name one and save yourself an unhappy surprise. And then he says he does realty things. And the guy's like, oh, you mean like representing apartments he doesn't actually represent? And then the guy's like, you know, that genre. Then Sipowicz responds with, big picture, anybody Hugh met since he was 21 is a possible suspect then. And the other guy says, it depends on how long they hold a grudge, which is amazing.
That's a pretty good line.
And then of course, like a skeevy car salesman, he offers $20 off the books if they can get the car back, which is hilarious, because they mentioned that the dude died.
Yeah, that guy does not care that this guy that he somewhat calls a friend is dead.
When they leave the room so he can write a statement, Sipowicz makes the joke that he'll steal the coffee maker, and then they run right into Mrs. Wiggins, the gentleman's ex-wife.
Yeah, I forgot that she shows up.
And when they go to talk to her in a separate room, Sipowicz talks to Dolores and says, make sure to look for bulges in that guy's shirt when he writes it. And then Dolores kind of gives a face like she didn't... Dolores gives a face like she doesn't understand what he meant and maybe thought it was sexual, which I thought was funny. Because she's like, she has no context, so just all of a sudden she's like, why do I have to look for bulges?
Yeah, her reaction... I like when they have her and Sipowicz try to interact with each other.
Yeah,
I think it's really interesting when they try to interact with each other, because it's like they're so, I think, different from each other. She's a ballerina. She's like, you know, a little. I mean, obviously, because she's a girl, but she's way more feminine than him.
Mm-hmm.
and he is just so, like, he is so, like, in your face. I think it's really interesting when they interact.
And because, like, what was it? I'm trying to think of all the other PAAs. One of them was just trying to get into his pants, which was weird. And then the other one was John, so he was immediately uncomfortable because he was a openly homosexual man. So,
and then Donna, he was just, he really liked because, like, he flirted with her, but then also, like, he just liked her.
She was also good at her job.
Yeah.
So when they go to talk to the ex-wife, she mentions that they're separated but still in contact, and he kind of uses her apartment as a base of operation, and she has no bail money. they mention that he was shot, and she goes, dead? And they're like, yes. And then she comes in with mutilated, and they're like, no. And she says, people have threatened to mutilate him. And Simone was like, well, obviously be interested in the specifics of those. And then she's like, castration, throwing him off a building. And he's like, no, not that. I mean, who said that? That was pretty funny.
It's like she asks, like she's saying all the like wrong things, you know? But at the same time, like they have to do something about it type situation. It's like, yeah, it's pretty funny.
They ask, oh, is it because of his scams and whatnot? And she said, yeah, his car sales and realty stuff. And they're like, well, do you have any specific ones that jump out? And she goes, when the shouting starts, I kind of screen out the details. Sometimes they're in foreign languages. So, yeah, that's all they get from her. They're like, well, we got nothing. The next scene, which is kind of a little nugget for the end of the episode and one scene in Sipowicz and Simone. Well, technically two. Sipowicz talks to Dr. Monzak, who is played by Titus Welliver, famous face, who's on Bosch and Deadwood, as well as Lost as the Man in Black. The reason he's talking to Dr. Monzak is because Sipowicz is suspicious of something his other doctor said, but doesn't want to ask him. Basically, he says his doctor wanted to do a blood test in about 2 weeks, but didn't say why. And he says that, basically Sipowicz says, I make a living out of listening to people's answers, and he doesn't seem too excited about my score, so do you know why? And Monzak explains, well, your score was a 0.6, which is down from, I think, 9 or whatever it was. But
it was somewhat high for him, higher than they wanted.
And they said, he said it should be 0. What does that mean? He's like, well, that means the cancer could have spread to a different area of your body, or it could just mean that you're slow to clear out the cancer cells. So then Sipowicz is like, so what you're telling me is you don't know what the hell's going on. And the doctor said, well, sometimes your doctors should do your worrying for you.
I think Sipowicz is exactly what is wrong with, well, the way Sipowicz is acting with doctors is what's exactly wrong with America today.
Okay.
And that, like, he doesn't understand that, like, science, yes, there are certain things in science that are definite, right? Okay, you know, there's gravity, the Earth's round, the sun, we rotate around the sun, all that shit. Like, there are certain things in science that,
Well, Kyle, is the Earth round, or is it a conspiracy, and we're actually on a pizza serving tray?
I don't know. Someone pointed this out the other day. It's called the atmosphere. It's not called the atmos disc. So, we live in a sphere.
Fake news.
So, we can move on from that. But that's the thing, is like, Sipowicz is this type of person that America has become, where it's like, that's not an answer. You telling me 0.6, you telling me, when I go to you, why is it 0.6 and not 0, and you go, I don't know. That's what basically Monzak says. He gives him reasons, but he's basically saying, I don't know.
Don't know for sure.
Like, I don't know why you're at a 0.6 when you should be at 0.0.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it's taking so long. Like, here are some reasons why. They're good reasons, they're bad reasons. But Sipowicz and most Americans can't accept that right now. What they need is they need to be told it's good or it's bad and it's going to go away. That also stems with how we are educating children, because we're not showing them, we're not teaching them science, we're not showing the importance of, like, what science is and how it works. Like, I was a shitty student when it came to, like, biology and chemistry. Mm-hmm. But, like, it didn't make me go, oh, well, I'm bad at this, so all this shit is dumb. No, like, you know what I mean? Like, when I was learning about, like, how the human body works, or, like, how the, like, biology dissecting frogs and stuff, and I wasn't, like, doing well, mm-hmm. or I wasn't getting an A in the class, but I was, like, barely passing. Like, it didn't make me go, well, all of this is dumb, and it's stupid, and they're all lying to me.
Yeah.
It's just, it's something I didn't understand, and something I wasn't good at. Whereas, like, sociology and anthropology, I had a better grasp for it and understood it more. When he gets, like, all, like, flustered and shit, it gets a little annoying to me.
Yeah.
And it makes me realize I could never be a doctor, because the patients are stupid.
Well, it's
and patients are so worried that they don't listen to the answers you're giving them, you know?
Yeah.
And we as people don't grasp the idea of death well and not being around. Yeah. And so when someone comes to us and when our body is failing and they go, oh, I really don't know exactly why this is happening. Like, we're trying to figure it out for you and see what's up, but I don't know why it's happening. Then people freak out because they just think, like, oh, I'm dying, and they don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, absolutely. All we can do is relate it to our own experience. And while our father didn't have cancer, we did have a very strange heart situation that we didn't have an answer to. And while our dad isn't exactly like Sipowicz, he has some Sipowicz tendencies. And
not
I would
a racism.
No. But he. But
he's gonna get so mad. You think he's mad at you now? He's gonna get so mad at me that I said that.
No, the thing that that he'll do too.
I'm gonna get a text that just says, like, I'm not fucking racist with a bunch of exclamation points.
Because he would do the same things where he's like, well, give it to me straight, like, what's happening? And when it started, they didn't have any answers. It was a big question of, we're trying to figure out what it is, so we have to observe and try different things to fix it. And also, you have like three different doctors who are now trying things that they know that aren't exactly, like, in the medical textbook.
And you have three different doctors that are all thinking it could be something different.
And, like, one thing that happened, because, hold on, I'm losing all my thoughts. So, Sipowicz and Dad are alike, where Dad will say, just tell me what's happening so that I can at least accept what is happening so we can start from, like, a baseline. And when doctors are like, well, that's the thing, we have to test this now and in 2 hours from now to see if anything changes and what it looks like, because then we'll have a better idea. They don't like that because they don't know what to do with themselves in the next 2 hours. So Sipowicz, because he is a detective, and because he's a little paranoid, and because he has a couple problems accepting things, the guy says, oh, it's at a 0.6 or a 0.9, I forgot what it was. We're gonna have to test in a couple weeks, and then doesn't explain why. Sipowicz is like, okay, he's hiding something from me, like a suspect, like a skill. So I have to go to the doctor I trust, because he'll give it to me straight. And then when the doctor gives it to him straight and says, the reason he's doing this is because he's not sure, Sipowicz took that as, he's lying to me. He doesn't want to tell me the truth. When in reality, Monzek says it right out. He's like, sometimes you gotta let your doctors do your worrying for you, because this could be nothing, or it could be something. It depends on how the second test comes out. Yeah, it was an interesting moment, because, like, it's framed where Sipowicz is like, I'm gonna call my doctor friend, who apparently is free to have lunch. He's just free to have lunch, because he comes down to get a hot dog from a hot dog cart. And he does this just because he didn't trust an answer his doctor said. But he doesn't ask that doctor, he asks this guy. And the reason he did it is because...
That's not uncommon, though.
And the reason he did it is because his detective brain switched on when dealing with his doctor. And now he has to corroborate evidence. It's just funny how his brain works on this situation, where it's like, I have to get the answers. The only way I get the answers, get in a different... witness, interrogate them with what I know and the information, and then the doctor just straight up looks at him and goes, the reason he did this is probably because he knew you would freak out, but he thought he would just test you again to make sure without telling you why he's testing, but it can be nothing, so.
People will roll their eyes. surprised when I say this, but, like, what Sipowicz did, I know it's a TV show and I know it's fictional, but it's very much a privilege that only, like, affluent white people have to be able to, like, just fucking phone another doctor to get a second opinion. Most of us can't just call up a second doctor and be like, hey, what's your opinion on this? I don't trust this guy. Like, he's very, very privileged in that way, too.
Also, just to keep those people's eyes rolling a little bit more, the only reason this doctor does that for this man is because this dude is a cop that happened to see his son die in his hospital.
Yeah.
And he happened to be there when this police officer got jumped. And I don't know if he's aware of the circumstances of Sipowicz being jumped or not. You know what I mean? Because Sipowicz was jumped because he got drunk, harassed a bunch of people of color, and then they kicked his ass and took his gun and badge. And then the episode...
Yeah, the doctor, like, didn't do his job. Like, he didn't report Sipowicz in the ER. He, like, gave him a fake name and shit. Like, he basically covered up a hate crime. And so that's why he's cool with Sipowicz.
So, like, basically he calls up this dude, like, hey, so I know that you're busy, but, like, we're ride or die buddies because of shit that's happened.
Yeah, we've been through some shit. Yeah.
So could you help me out with this?
We're familia.
and some of us don't have that corona buddy that happens to be a doctor. So it's, I mean, like you said, it's a television show. It's for drama. It's to heighten drama. So that's, and also I want to, like, I'll explain at the end why this whole cancer scare even happens in this episode, because I think there is a pretty big reason they do this.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Sipowicz gets that information, and then the next time we see Sipowicz and Simone, they're kind of just sitting at their desks, and Sipowicz is like, you know, you usually feel pretty bad when a case isn't going to clear. And Simone's like, you don't think this is a good thing to happen, that we got rid of this guy? And he's like, I don't think even his priest would say anything nice about him. And then two uniform officers come in, one being Shannon, a guy we see constantly. They said they got a man with a gun call, and they go to the store and take a ride with the store owner. So they find the guy in the car that was stolen from their case. When they go up to talk to him, the guy pulls out the gun, and the dude said he almost got his head blown off because he pulled out the gun and he said he was just giving it to him. And it was a 25 with one expended round, and they asked him, did he say anything? And he said, oh, the opposite. And he's like, does that mean no? And he's like, yes. And then we meet Ross Cheswick, and I thought
why didn't he just say no?
I have no idea. He's trying to get a detective badge, and he thought it would be, he has to talk clever to get it.
That's the way to go, yeah.
So Ross Cheswick is played by a Neil Guintori, Guintori, I think. And I thought he looked familiar, so I looked him up. This dude was in Child's Play, the first Chucky movie, which might be where I saw him from. He was in Shawshank Redemption as one of the prisoners that hung out with Morgan Freeman. And then he was in possibly one of the greatest films ever made, Waterworld, as somebody. He has been in things and you would recognize him, so if his face looks familiar to you, he's been in some shit.
Interesting.
And they say, we have to talk to you, Ross, and he goes, I understand that you need to. And then as they walk... walk away, Simone says, that's a refreshing attitude. When they get him into a room, he's like, well, you got a jackpot here. And, what do you think you should do about that? And he's like, coming clean, I guess. And then Sipowicz says, that's that refreshing attitude again.
He's pretty forthcoming.
And then they said, well, what about the gun? He's like, it's not mine. He's like, how did you get it? In an altercation. And they're like, an altercation with who? And he said, I had an altercation with a guy from the gun. With the gun. And Sipowicz says, you've told us exactly nothing, Ross. And right before that, he says, I've never been guilty of a crime before. And it's kind of like, he looks almost like a 12-year-old. And then he tells the story in insane detail, where essentially he was going out on a test drive of a used car with the plates of a decommissioned car that he has. and he was going to steal the car and put the new plates on that and try and get away before it gets reported stolen. The car salesman noticed the plates and put together what his plan was and said, "Give me all your money. I will let you take the car and give you like a 4 or 5 hour head start." And the guy says, "Well, I don't have that kind of money." And when he saw that the guy had like 27 bucks, he gun butts him. So the guy tries to get out of the car and run away, and the car salesman, Hugh, chased after him. And then in the struggle, Hugh ended up being shot. After he explains that that's what happened, Sipowicz actually checks for the sore on the back of his head, which seems like it's possible. And then Simone said, "And in all that, you didn't think to call the cops." And the guy said, "Have you ever heard of Prim?" And at this point, I was like, I feel like we need to play our game. Is this guy on the spectrum?
Okay, good, because I
you know, like,
I was gonna say he was kind of playing him very slow.
Well, it's not even slow. It's almost like he's Abed if he wasn't obsessed with movies and television. The way he says everything, he's like, "I was gonna get the plates off my 78 Volkswagen Bug that's up on blocks. I'm gonna take it with the test drive, change it onto that vehicle, and then take that vehicle away." And like, just the way he lines everything up by what happened. Because it was like, I think this guy might be a little autistic. Just a little bit. And when he asked, "Do you know where Prim?" And then he said, "Do you know where Prim is?" Sipowicz was like, "No." He's like, "I had this crazy idea that I'd pick up my ex-wife and go to Prim, but I needed to get some travel money and some food for the road. So I went to like 15 different stores, but couldn't muster up the courage to actually rob any of them."
Did you talk about Prim, Nevada?
Yeah. It's a growing community in Nevada, as Ross Cheswick would tell you.
Yeah, dude. Fucking Prim, Nevada, bro.
Sipowicz and Simone go, "Excuse us for a minute," and he goes, "Sure, go ahead," which was hilarious. Sipowicz says to the cop who has to sit with him, "Don't sit too close or you'll catch being a moron."
It's a pretty good one-liner every now and then.
Yeah, it's a good episode for those. Then they talk about cleaning up this story for him so he doesn't get arrested. Because they feel like he did not plan to murder that guy, and because his plan was to steal the car, he basically is in a jam because he planned to commit a crime, ended up committing a second crime. That usually doesn't look too good to a grand jury. So Sipowicz is reluctant to do this because he doesn't want to walk it through Sylvia because he found out about his possible cancer woes. And then Simone's like, "Okay, but I want to talk through this with Sylvia so that this guy doesn't get on a stand and talk about Prim, Nevada, and then the nice cops who tried to get him off, and then we'll be in jail." So then Sipowicz says, "You'll carry the conversational load." And then they decide that's what they're going to go with, talk to Sylvia. When they talk to Sylvia, they run the whole story, and Sylvia says, "Hey, if he admits to trying to commit a crime and then other crimes occur, he's still going to be guilty of that murder." So then,
as it should be.
So then she says, "You tell him to leave out the detail about the license plates, and he'll have a much brighter future." And they kind of run down how it'll look. The idea being, you know, he only meant to take a test drive, and things went crazy because the guy tried to rob him. When they leave, Sipowicz and Simone are like happy about this because all he has to do is leave out something, and then he'll be fine. They cut back to Ross Cheswick, and he says the phrase, "I can't help feeling I'm imprisoned." And Sipowicz says, "That would be because you are." They tell him to forget the plates and just pretend that's not even a part of the story anymore. He confirms that that's the details. Or Simone says, "Let's just pretend that they're not there anymore." And Ross Cheswick says, "Start on that road. There's whole phases of my life I'd just as soon leave out." And then gives him a wink. And it's like, this guy, I think this dude is on the spectrum. I think this dude has a little bit of the autism. It'll probably go undiagnosed because he's just a little bit weirder than some folk. But yeah, that's just weird.
The dude is just off.
Before we get to the end of the episode, let's run down what happens with Medavoy, Kirkendall, Russell, and Martinez. Because
a lot of people to investigate one little thing.
And I want to get to a point that I know you're going to pop off like crazy once we get there. Because as you know, they're looking for a prostitute named Marva off of some information that Russell got from a prostitute. They go to pick her up, and I wrote she's got no love from the other hookers because they're willing to rat her out immediately and then talk shit about her as she's getting arrested. Metavoy says, take off, and then the girl makes a joke, I'm on the love boat and you're going down on the Titanic, and I was like, okay, I mean. And then she looks at Metavoy and says, what are you looking at, Bricktop? And I found that funny because I feel like if Metavoy had any nuts, he would have, like, got all up in her face. But because...
Yeah, like, if it was Sipwitz, he would have, like, oh, you want to take a ride downtown?
Yeah, Metavoy...
And he would have, like, gotten right, like, right in her face and started calling her, like, a whore.
It'd be more cleverly written, for sure, but it would just be, like, he would just go off on her until she was actually scared that he was going to arrest her for nothing, essentially. They bring Marva in, and she believes that she's being arrested only because of these jealous hoes. Because, you know, it's always those jealous hoes.
Those hoes ain't loyal.
They ain't loyal. None of them hoes. She says it's because Ricky's coming out of the joint making all of their pimps look shitty, and he's going to make her the bottom hoe. Which, you know, it's good that she has some aspirations for her line of work. That's how you're successful.
So you want to be the bottom hoe?
That usually means the best, I think.
I thought you wanted to be the top hoe.
I think bottom hoe mean, well, Kyle, the hoes are always at the bottom. The pimps at the top.
That's right. What was Butter's bottom bitch? What was that about?
Well, he was Butter's bottom.
So his bottom bitch, was she the top?
Yeah, she was the top. Marva says that they're making up all that information about Calvin, and then she says, you all need to stop listening to vicious-minded hoes, and I, you know what, that's just one of my mottos.
Yeah, I know. I don't listen to hoes when they're vicious-minded.
No, you don't listen to them vicious-minded hoes.
If they're maybe a little upset, then I would listen to them. But if they're being vicious-minded, no.
That's where you draw the line when it comes to hoes. They tell her to be quiet and take a couple breaths, and she blows in her face, like a folk that believe the coronavirus is a hoax. And then she admits that she did what she did, and that's it. And they said, well, what did you do? And she says, you know, selling him some condoms. And they're all like, what do you mean? He's like, I used to sell him used rubbers for some nickel rock. It's always for that crack rock.
Yep.
She says she doesn't know what the condoms were going to be used for. Jill calls the lie. And then she said he wanted the spunk inside, and I was like, wow, that's a word you could use on television. That's a shock.
Spunk? Spunk?
Yeah, I didn't think you could use that word as to refer to semen.
I think that's probably my favorite way to describe semen.
Hold on. I mean, we don't have a lot of time, but if you were, let's rate them a top five words for semen. So, at the top, you got spunk.
I've got spunk, I've got spooge.
Spunk, spooge. Very close.
Man juice.
Man juice. Mmm. Okay.
It's just straight coming at you, cum.
That's number four.
And then I don't know, I really had a... You really put me on the spot. I don't know if I have a fifth one.
Now, quick question. Would you consider man gravy and man juice the same?
Yeah, same thing. Interchangeable.
Okay. Interchangeable. Man juice and man gravy.
But I feel like if you're trying to be more disgusting, you would use man gravy.
Yeah, that's way worse than man juice.
Yeah, well, because like when I think of gravy, I think of like something like gray and like it's like a liquid blanket that just like pours over something.
And you think of gross, and you think, you know, of biscuits, and of course you think of biscuits.
Yeah, exactly. Like when it's like something sloppy on top of biscuits, but like juice, you know, that could be just like a glass of Kool-Aid.
Well, I think that really depends on your consistency. I think that's when you use juice versus gravy. Depends on the consistency of your.
Sure enough, if you got some chunky juice, then you know. You got cottage cheese juice.
Wait, would you say Jizz? You know? Would you say Jizz is number five then?
I think so. I think so. We can add it there.
Spunk, spooge.
Like, throughout the day, I'm just going to be thinking of how to say like cum in different ways, and it's gonna pop into my brain, and I'm just gonna text you different words. I'll work on a top ten list.
Spunk. So far, we got spunk, spooge, man juice / man gravy, cum, and then jizz.
Jizz. Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'd put baby batter up a little higher, but that's
baby
just...
batter's pretty good. Shooting little white ghosts.
Oh man, she ain't afraid of no ghosts. She's about to get slimed like Bill Murray.
Uh-huh. And then depending on the consistency, that slime will either be gravy or juice. So.
Oh my god. Okay.
But no, spunk is super safe because,
It's just kind of insane, like, the words that somehow were allowed on TV when you watch the show back. And when she said that, I was like, I'm surprised that was allowed.
Dude, it was like the 80s and, it was like, 80s, 90s, like, there was like a little bit more freedom on TV.
Oh, man.
For Christ's sakes, they're basically showing, like, half-naked fuck scenes on NYPD Blue on Channel 7, you know?
That's
like,
true. They're showing some soft core.
They're pushing the boundaries. Like, they said the N-word a couple times. They've, you know, had some pretty gory shit happen. Like, they were pushing the boundaries then. I don't think you could say something like that now on basic cable.
No, I don't think so either.
It would have... You could say spunk on, like, a HBO or Netflix, but you couldn't. You couldn't say that on, like, Channel 7. If you're doing, like, a 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, like, drama or 9 o'clock, you know?
Yeah, like...
No way you'd be able to say that.
They're never saying spunk on This Is Us.
Exactly.
She mentions that he wanted the spunk inside to throw off DNA evidence. He had been arrested and charged with rape off of... or convicted of rape off of DNA evidence. She gives up the places and what time he'll be out. And Greg leaves in disgust. And this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. He goes into the bathroom, and he's, like, clearly agitated. He freaks out putting soap on his hands. I'm guessing because he's got, you know, cum on his brain. But James is like, oh, yeah, he's in the bathroom, and he's happy because James Jr. seems healthy. And Medavoy isn't even listening, really. He's just agitated.
Well, we've established Medavoy doesn't give a fuck about kids.
No. Only
whether
right
his own, whether they're his own or his partner's.
he only really, really cares right when they come out. And then once they're out, you know, who gives a shit?
So he's in the bathroom, he's washing his hands in disgust.
And James is like, hey, you seem agitated. And then he's like, oh yeah, we're looking at some overtime. He's like, okay. He's like, what's going on? He's like, well, this guy's M.O. is disgusting. And he's like, well, what's his M.O.? And he's like, what's his M.O.? Did you leave before you saw the inordinate amount of semen? And he's like, and what's great is, like, James gives a classic face, like, don't know what you're talking about. Like, like, so, like, Medavoy just gets angrier and angrier, and then he's like, it's a perfect moment of, like, misplaced anger, because then he's like, don't let me spill it out for you, James. And then he actually spells it out, that he mixes a whole bunch of semen and puts it on the victim to not get arrested for rape. But and then after he's done yelling at James for no reason, he like calms down and goes, oh yeah, it's good to hear about James Jr. And then it just like ends. Like, after I've yelled at you for no reason.
They can't just let him ignore it, because then he just looks like a total asshole.
So he's like, yeah, good news. I'm going to go probably yell at somebody else who doesn't deserve it. So they bring in Calvin, and he is played by Hawthorne Jones, which I could have swore I've seen him in things before. He's been in Speed, Seven, and The Color Purple.
Yeah. He was the bus driver in Speed.
Oh, he was the bus driver in Speed, the first one. Before
he has one of the best lines. He has one of the best lines in a movie when Sandra Bullock is running to check the bus, or chase the bus down in the beginning because she just needs to get it to get to work or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He stops in like the middle of traffic, opens the doors, and he goes, "This ain't no bus stop." lets her on. Like, yeah, he's
the weird things we remember.
Well, that was a thing, like, when we lived in Concord, we watched Speed, and we thought that part was fucking hilarious. So we would just walk around telling, like, we would just walk around and be like, we'd look at someone and be like, this ain't no bus stop! And then we would just, like, walk away.
Oh, man, that's good. Anyways. Okay, Calvin. The guy who rapes women and then just dumps a bunch of semen on him and thinks that'll solve it. He's like, you can't keep bringing me in on past mistakes. And they're like, well, why do you think we bring you in as opposed to anybody else? And he said he was telling people on the street that sooner or later you would be coming for me because he has a sixth sense. They asked about Marva. He's like, I know she's a hoe. And they asked, well, didn't you buy rubbers? And he's like, I declined to say. And that's he said, she said, like the president and his sex. They're like, did you tell her about mixing a bunch of semen together? And he's like, you got any scientific evidence? That's how OJ, like basically OJ proved that. So there was a Clinton reference and an OJ reference within like 30 seconds of each other. 90s as fuck. This is where things get real sticky because he says, you got any scientific evidence? And Medavoy popping off just goes, yeah, we got samples from all of her tricks. And he's like, there's no way you'd get him to cooperate. And then the other detectives go in with him and say, do you mean tell their wives they're picking up street hookers or just give a sample? And then he's like, well, how could you rule any of them out? And he's like, because they're all mixed together, Calvin. You're the only person that had access to all of them. And he's like, well, how do you know Marva didn't do it? And she's like, Marva doesn't make semen, so she has no motive. And then he's like, I gotta think. And then Metavoy says, don't take too long. And they walk out of the room, and then the Kirkendall goes, whoa. And then Martinez says, that's good stuff, Greg. And then Russell says, I think he's gonna give it up. The next scene, I gotta burn through this so I can get to my point. So the next scene, Calvin is all confident, and then he's like, you had almost had me admitting to something I didn't do. I did buy those condoms, but I didn't tell you who I sold them to. And he's like, okay, who'd you sell them to? He's like, I don't know, he never said his name, but that's who must have done this. He just pops off, Medavoy just pops off, and says they got an eyewitness. And he tells the truth that the body was dumped in a place where there were two bodies, but lies that someone saw him drop his. And he convinces him by saying, do you wear a hat? And he's like, I never wear a hat, and I could bring in witnesses that say I never wear a hat. And then and he's like, well, you weren't wearing a hat, and they described your hairstyle. And then he tells them what twists are, and they have an argument about that. And he's like, it doesn't matter what your hair is called, what matters is that he pointed out your hair. So then Calvin basically admits it by saying she was trying to push me out.
Yeah.
Then she mentions that she was strong and she fought like a hoe. Probably one of the most sinister admissions of rape on the show so far. And then he says two culprits.
Yeah, pretty nonchalant.
It was also like, he's like, okay, I'm screwed. Let me just say out loud that not only did I rape this person, I will rape anyone that I decide I want to. And then he says, believe that two culprits in the same lot in the same night. I've had bad luck my whole life. Okay, we don't need to talk about your bad luck if you've just admitted to raping and murdering a woman. That's kind of day one shit. We don't talk about your bad luck if you're doing shit like that.
Well, I'm devil's advocate here. No, I'm just kidding. totally kidding.
Well, not to play. Not to play a little Keanu Reeves Al Pacino on you. The next scene, James makes a joke that Medavoy was hot, saying that he's coming close to searing heat, and then says those were two great interviews. And then as he walks back to his desk, Fancy's like, "Hey, Medavoy," and Medavoy's like, "I'm getting my five in, boss." And he goes, "No, I'm just hearing the highlights," and Kirkendall says he turned that Warpo's head around, and then Russell said, you worked him like a champ. And then Fancy said, I'm going to put you up for commendation. And then Sipowicz is like, why? And then Fancy's like, oh, he did two great...
He did his job.
Yep, that's what I'm going to get to. Hold on. He's like, why? Why? He's like, well, he had two great interviews, got the guy to give it up. And then Simone, slightly condescending. A slightly condescending Simone, if you look at it. He goes, way to go, Greg. And then Greg goes into the bathroom and then pinches himself because he doesn't believe it. Okay, here we go. So, because this happens maybe at someone's own workplace. Do you need to give people constant praise if they just do their job?
Some people, yes.
Because, oh my god, they're ready to blow this dude for doing what Simone and Sipowicz do every fucking week.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's unfucking real. The way that they're, like, fawning over him when you're like, that's what you're supposed to do. He also did it, if you checked what I said, by lying his ass off. He lied about everything. He didn't do anything that special, he just lied.
Yeah, he didn't do detective work.
He didn't do
the full detective work. He just kind of lied.
What I absolutely love was, like, because I'm not even joking, when I first watched this episode to do this podcast, when Fancy said, I'm going to put you up for commendation, I literally thought, for fucking what? What did he do? Like,
and it's not like he solved, like, a serial killer. I'm not saying that this woman's life doesn't matter. That's
of
not
course.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
What I'm saying was, it's not like it's not like he was solving the Webster killing.
It's not like he solved the Bucci case.
Yeah, it's not like he solved that Lost Israel case where that man killed his son and pinned it on that deaf and dumb
homeless
guy in the park.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't do any. He didn't solve any of those cases.
No.
But, like, this motherfucker's going up for accommodation, yet Sipowicz can't get grade one.
Sipowicz can't get grade one. He does this every week, and sometimes he does it from actual work.
Sometimes he does it, like, two or three times a day.
Sometimes he walks into a room and accidentally solves a case.
I know it's all bullshit because, like, you know... it's fictional, it's writing, and blah, 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 but, like, you've created this world, right?
Yeah.
You've created these rules that we're just gonna follow. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, at the same time, it's like, you have to be careful with what you do. I don't know, it's just funny.
Yeah. So,
like, the fucking, like, blowjobs, the mental blowjobs.
Unreal.
That, like, his partners are giving him.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about, like, they're basically, like, treating him like, dude, you just pulled an Andy Sipowicz in there.
You're a goddamn rock star.
You're like, it's like Andy Jr.
And all you did...
Or it's the new Simone.
And all you did was lie. You didn't go find evidence. You didn't, like, outwit the guy that hard. You just lied to a point where the guy was like, huh, maybe I...
Yeah, you didn't walk him into anything. You didn't, like, manipulate what he was saying to your benefit or anything like that. You just straight up lied to him and he bought it, luckily.
Yeah, it's insane. So the end of the episode, to wrap it all up, Sylvia and Sipowicz are in the kitchen, and Sipowicz is doing a long look outside the window, for some reason. He says, I need help with some news. Dr. Garrick wants to do another test of my blood. So I pursued that with Dr. Monzak. He's talking like it was an interrogation, which I thought was fun.
Yeah, because when it's something that I think he's nervous about, he reverts to being a detective.
Because that's, and like, so what he's good at, yeah.
It's what he's good at, and he knows how to, like, form everything in that way, you know what I mean?
And he says, because of the information... I went to talk to Monzak, and then Monzak said that his scores could be better, and that the way he presents it is the pessimistic view. He says, the cancer may have spread through me. He doesn't open with, it's possible that A, the cancer may have spread through me, or I'm slow to clear. He opens with, the cancer may have spread through me. So then, of course, Sylvia starts tweaking pretty hard. She's the one that brings up, is it possible that something else could be happening? And he goes... Yeah, there's no harm taking the positive view. That's what I could use help with. And she's like, did they give you percentages? And he's like, Well, the good alternatives are likely enough to have a name for it. It's called a slow clearer, and I'm a slow clearer. We should go with that. And then he says, look at how much good comes so far, and then they have one of their weird moments of, like, holding each other in the kitchen. I think that only exists to... Because this is the end of the season. Like, we're not thinking... Because we're binging all these. Like, the next episode is the last episode of season 5.
Yeah.
They're just given a little bit of a hint that maybe Sipowicz still has cancer for next season. That's basically like the only reason they're doing this. Is to give you a mini cliffhanger before the real cliffhanger of the last episode. Sipowicz may still have cancer. So they're just planting that seed now if they want to use it for season 5. Or season 6, rather. But it was just so awkward where it was like, yeah, could be the worst news ever. Or it could be perfectly fine news. Let's hold each other in the kitchen. Is there anything else about this show that you want to talk about before we wrap it all up?
What was going on, like, the cases weren't, like, that interesting. I felt like they were, like, you were right. They're trying to make what Sipowicz was going through the main storyline, keep people, like, drawn into that. So I feel like back in the 90s, I feel like, or 90s, early 2000s, TV was a little different in how they wrote episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I was just rewatching, like, I think I told you before we started, I was rewatching Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
So I watched the 3rd, 4th, and 5th seasons. Why I watched those and not the first two, I don't know why. I just, for some reason, wanted to start there. It's really weird, like, when you watch NYPD Blue, I feel like the last, like, 3 or 4 episodes leading up to the, They're not as high
quality.
Yes, like I feel like they don't want to take away from the finale.
Yeah, they don't want to.
Whereas in Breaking Bad, and I know like Breaking Bad is such a certain like show, but I've also heard this about Mad Men, and I've also like The Wire's like this, Deadwood was like this. They ramped up to it. They didn't try to hold back before the season finale. It's like they ramped up to it. And the quality, they just kept going up and up and up and got crazier and crazier. Until, bam, at the end. And then it was it.
Yeah, this episode definitely feels like... It seems like setting the plate for a finale. And then, of course, the next episode is the finale. But it also... You gotta think, like, this is also a different era of... not movie making. This is a different era of TV where, like... You're given 24 episodes.
Yeah.
So, like, you're going to have some stinkers just to get an episode out. And then you're like...
Oh, yeah, true. It's hard to go 24 for 24.
And then you also have to realize you have to make, like... Well, this is 22 episode season. You have to make a really, really good episode, season finale, to make sure that you get renewed and that people want to come back. But you also have to somehow make a through line for 20 straight episodes. And you have to deal with people's schedules and have it make sense. So they have a lot more to do. Even though I'm not saying Breaking Bad had it easier. That's not what I'm saying at all. But it's just a different kind of making. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely, like, a few Breaking Bad episodes that are... I don't know if I would say they're stinkers, but they're definitely not, like, their best.
They're not banging on all cylinders.
Yeah, and the same thing for, like, The Wire. Like, there's a lot of episodes in season 5 that are, like... not great, in my opinion. You know, that whole season as a whole is interesting, and it's still pretty good TV, but, like, you know, it's for everything. Yeah. It's hard to be good all the time, the whole time.
It's hard to, yeah. It's almost impossible to make everything a thing.
And that's why I, like kind of respect what British TV does.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because they're basically, like, no, we just really want to be really good. We want the TV show to be on for as long as it's going to be good.
And they also do that. They also do that thing where they're
4 seasons. Let's keep it like that.
They also do that thing where they're like, "Oh, you have an idea? Here's 6 episodes." Not okay. Make a whole thing once. Then we're going to use that one and then try to recapture what you just did for like 20 more episodes. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. We're on Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod. Have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on the different formats that you're using to listen to it. It helps people see the show in the algorithm, and more importantly, they may check out NYPD Blue, the best show ever. It's currently streaming on Hulu every single episode. Also, important note, I missed a famous face in this episode, Seminal Thinking. Seth Jaffe, who played Craig Reisendorf, is actually the same Seth Jaffe who is an interventionalist on the show Intervention, another show that's on Hulu. I've been watching it lately, and I knew I recognized that dude's face, and holy crap, it's the dude on an episode of NYPD Blue that we watched. Crazy small world. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books out there. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles written about the show. True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons. And then Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. Have a good one. Please distance socially. Wear a mask. Make smart health decisions. Protect each other and yourself. Have a good one. Peace. All right, if you made it this far, what's about to come up now is some audio from the episode that's a little spoilerific for the entire series. There's two different bits. If you do not care, then it doesn't matter at all. But if you do care and you're going through the show chronologically and you don't want to be spoiled, even though we spoiled some other stuff, get out now. But here's some more stuff from this episode that's more spoilery.
I think this is going to be maybe a spoiler for the rest of the show, so you may have to take it out.
Uh-oh.
But I think you can sum up James's relationship with Medavoy like this. I think James and Medavoy had a work relationship, a work friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But when Medavoy, but when James was like at home and he was like with his wife or his girlfriend, he was like, dude, this guy is fucking unbelievable. And that's shown by when James leaves, he never comes back to visit Medavoy.
Ever.
And Medavoy never has a conversation where he's like, oh, I'm getting together with James today.
Mm-mm.
We're going to grab a beer. Does anyone want to come? That never happens.
Never.
It's like they never were friends again. Like, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I guess it's true.
Anyways.
But it was just so awkward where it was like, yeah, could be the worst news ever, or it could be perfectly fine news. Let's hold each other in the kitchen.
Instead, you get even worse news, and so in season 6. So.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited that we're going to do that. I
have a deal with you, and I think this is how we're going to have to do the beginning of season 6.
What is that deal, Kyle?
I think you're just going to have to do the first...
four episodes?
Yeah, I with that. And I'll just enter when it's Danny Boy or whatever.
Okay, well, spoiler alert for everybody who's listening. I'm going to cut this out anyway.
Cut this part out, but I'll just enter on Danny Boy.
I don't think that's acceptable. I think you have to be there. I think you have to...
I've only watched that episode once.
I think you gotta do it. You gotta face it, man. Besides,
I faced it that first time. I'm good.
Oh, man. I want to talk about it with you, though, Bat. We're gonna do it. We're gonna figure it out. I'm gonna make it happen.
Kirk, he was leaving the hospital.
I made a TikTok, like us kids do. I made a TikTok, and someone made it where you put your video on the end of it, and they said, "What was the hardest you cried for a TV show character?" And I said, "Well, that's a tie between Detective Bobby Simone and Charlie Pace from Lost." And then somebody commented under my post and said, "Why doesn't this have more likes? Nobody watches the show." And I was like, I don't know, man. Oh, man. Anything
about... I want to go to fucking the West Wing. Get the fuck out of here, dude.